Alien secretion.
I just want to note, alien secretion and cocktail are two things that should not be in the same right now.
Oh my
it's
god!
It's green and it's glowing.
That brings so many new connotations to so many alien romances that I've read.
Hello, and welcome to the Skippy Fanny Show's Torture Cinema.
Tommyknockers knocking at my door.
Tommyknockers,
let him go.
I'm Sean.
I'm Jen.
I'm Daniel.
And on this live Torture Cinema show, we will discuss the 1993 ABC miniseries adaptation of Stephen King's novel, The Tommyknockers. It is directed by John Power and adapted by Lawrence D. Cohen. This 3.5 hour, it's not 3.5 hours, it's 2 hours and 52 minutes, yeah, Daniel.
No, it's a little over 3 hours.
No, it's not.
No, it's really not.
No, it's not. It's only
maybe
like
commercials.
3 hours if you watched it on television with commercials. We did not.
It
How
felt like 3+ hours.
You are incorrect. But this 2 hour and 52 minute
maybe that's because you made us all rewatch like multiple scenes, Sean.
Well, it was 3 hours for you, but that's because you bastard left. Okay, hold on. So we recorded, we did a live watch. We do live watch the Monday before every Torture Cinema episode. This is a good time for an announcement. But this is being recorded live at 6:30 p.m. Central on Alphabet Streams on Twitch, twitch.tv/AlphabetStreams, because we do every Friday at 6:30 p.m. Central. We do a live show. Torch Cinema is the last Friday of every month, and every preceding Monday at 6:30 p.m. Central, we also do the Discord live watch for any of our patron supporters at $3 and up. You can come in, you can watch the movie with us, because after all, you want to be tortured too. It's wonderful. And we watched Tommyknockers this past Monday, and during the session, when I was very, very committed to watching this film with everybody, I needed to go to the restroom. I needed a drink, but I was like, I got to stay for everybody. I don't want to pause and extend their viewing experience.
Are you telling me Daniel just left in the middle of the movie?
Here's the crazy thing. Daniel not only left once, he left more than once. I submit probably at least 3 times to go get alcohol, and he didn't tell us so we could pause it. So we watched at least 10 minutes of the movie that Daniel didn't watch, probably more like 45
minutes. It was like 3 minutes.
The horror! The disrespect!
Total disrespect for the process, and I will not have it, sir. And so I made them rewatch because I was like, you know what? Both Daniel and Andrea, who is a Patreon supporter, thank you, Andrea, you get 5 million points, were there. And Andrea also left to go get a beverage. And I was like, you bastards, I've been sitting here watching this movie, like thinking I'm talking to you guys, and you've just got up and left. So I said, fuck all y'all. I literally rewound it like 10 minutes because Jeff Exelon.
You rewound it all the way back to the beginning.
Yeah. I did. And I was like, I'm going away. I'm going to go get something to drink and I will come back whenever I fucking want. And so I just left it for like 10 minutes running of just a random 10 minutes in the past when they wanted to see the dog, Petey. Like they wanted to see what he looked like in the past. And I just left it there and came back like, I don't know. It might have been an hour for all I know. I don't know how long I was gone. Don't give a shit. Fuck all y'all.
I mean, I think it's absolutely terrible. And really, they should have a lot more respect to this absolutely landmark miniseries adapting one of the greatest novels by one of the greatest horror writers in American history.
The whole process just fails, you know, if I go up for a minute. So yeah, it was three plus hours.
I stayed to watch the entire thing in a small screen in the corner of my phone while I was reading a romance novel.
Son of a bitch. Hey you. Anyway, okay. This 2 hour and 52 minute extravaganza Stars Marge Helgenberger, Jimmy Smits, the great American treasure, Tracy Lords, John Carradine's brother Robert, who knew he had another...
You didn't what? Know okay. about...
I can't keep track of the Carradines. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. He's been in so many things. I'm just very surprised. I'll be honest.
Anyway, a bunch of other human folk were also in this. Petey the dog was in this, and there were some aliens, presumably played by somebody. But there you go. I also want to do note that the Shan Monster has given us a follow. Thank you very much.
Yay.
Danke schön.
Anyway, please someone else continue the script because we haven't even gotten to describing this movie.
Yeah, well, you kind of distracted me by all your talk of, you know, the disrespect that people gave to this film. But it was, in fact, chosen by our Patreon supporters based on a poll that Jeff the Gracious forced us to hold on Stephen King adaptations that suck. There's a lot of those, so...
Yeah,
that's actually I'm impressed that you guys narrowed it down to this, frankly.
And by you guys, it was me.
Fair enough.
I did the work, guys.
Did you flip a coin or?
No, I mean, I kind of was like, normally when I make a poll for Torture Cinema, I try when I have a theme to like not pick too many things from the same, like too close together
era.
In year.
Yeah.
I try to do like one a decade, but with Stephen King, like that doesn't leave you a lot of options because he hasn't been around since 1910. So adaptations are basically end of the 70s, a couple in the 80s, and then it's like a bunch of shitty things in the 90s and then the 2000s. And then now he's in the renaissance of good stuff.
But you kind of, at least you went for like some more obscure things maybe, as opposed to like the
a
obvious,
bit.
The obvious crap. But.
And I do check like if there's, you know, if it is streaming somewhere, like we have a reasonable ability to watch it. So there are some adaptations that like I'm not paying $8.99 for us to watch a like an adaptation nobody talks about, even Stephen King, mostly because he doesn't remember from his Coke days, but still.
Right. So The Tommyknockers has an IMDb rating of 5.4 out of 10 and holds an approval rating of 30% on Rotten Tomatoes, with an average rating of 4.5 out of 10 there. The site's critical consensus reads, and I quote, "Unlikable characters, a bloated narrative, and a drab scripting make the Tommyknockers a hard watch even for the most die-hard of Stephen King fans." Apparently that also includes Stephen King himself, who has stated that he does not care for this adaptation at all. Though to be fair, King has also described his own novel, The Tommyknockers, as, quote, "an awful book."
Yeah.
That's amazing, because... he thought Maximum Overdrive, which is mentioned in our chat right now, was going to be a great film because he directed it. Mm. And as I seem to recall, no, it was not.
No, no, there was nothing great about that. And we did cover that, did we not?
We did.
Yeah.
We covered that and The Lawnmower.
Barely an adaptation.
Yeah, and we have covered The Shining, by the way, but that was not for Torture Cinema. That was for Totally Pretentious. Stephen King doesn't like The Shining.
You know, as...
which I find interesting.
For different reasons.
Out of the three films that were bad that you've mentioned, this one is by far the best one. So that's something.
Mm.
Okay, this is how I know Jen is very much trolling.
What? Out of Maximum Overdrive and Lawnmower Man and this? You're telling me that...
Shining, Jen.
I said out of the three bad films you mentioned, I did not say include The Shining in that. Out of
the three bad
films.
This is not the better one.
Maximum Overdrive? You're going with Maximum Overdrive.
Here's why, and I will submit this... I will submit this in writing in triplicate, signed and notarized. Maximum Overdrive is 1 hour and 38 minutes. I rest my case.
But it doesn't have Jimmy Smits.
But it doesn't
have
Jimmy
Smits. That is true,
Smith.
But even... It does have Emilio Estevez, though.
He's not... no.
He's not a national treasure.
Not a national treasure. His father is a national treasure.
But he
is not.
Okay.
Are you really asking me if Emilio...
He's one of the Sheens. I mean, Emilio Estevez is a Sheen.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And you're not calling Martin Sheen a national fucking treasure?
No, I'm not really. Jimmy Smits is better.
Okay.
Let's be real. Which one would you rather hang out with?
He's only the president of the United States who knighted Jimmy Smits.
There's I'm no sure. knighting in America, you lying sack of shit. What are you talking about?
And I'm sure he did it, at least at some point in the West Wing. I'm sure that happened. Totally.
Jimmy Smits.
Dame Jimmy Smits.
Look, just continue the script, okay? We have to get through this, Jen.
All right. As always, please share your comments with us about this and past episodes at skipfanfantasy.com/listener suggestions or join us on Discord and become a Patreon supporter. If you're live with us today, feel free to throw thoughts and questions our way. Only Sean will be reading them, though, because I do not have the chat open, which is probably a mistake on my part.
Nor do I. So if you're ignored, it is all Sean's fault.
Yep. It's all Sean's fault. Yeah.
As usual.
Yep.
See, okay. Well,
we already agree on something about this, Daniel.
Come on. Can we just continue forward, Jen, please?
Yes. Let's.
I want to go to bed at a normal adult hour, then, which I can't do with you.
On a
your
Friday?
Nonsense.
On a Friday, really?
I'm 40, Jen. It's over for me. I can't stay up anymore.
Yeah.
Daniel knows what I'm talking about. What happens to you when you stay up past 10:30, Daniel?
I become comatose. And drool starts coming out.
I took a nap.
Then I lose consciousness.
Advanced kidney failure starts after 11:30. Yeah.
That might have something to do with the copious amounts of alcohol you drank during torture cinema in order to survive the films we watch.
But that does bring me to what is the next part of our script. So, yes. We're going to talk about what we're drinking before we get to what this movie is about. As always, I want to remind folks, sometimes members of this show do imbibe alcoholic beverages. While we do have fun and we joke about alcohol and all those kinds of things, as always, please drink responsibly. Do not drink and drive. If you do have too much, put your keys away, maybe sit, drink some water, nibble on some crackers or some saltines or something, and just take a chill. Do not drive. Don't do anything irresponsible. Don't overconsume. Don't become addicted. Take care of yourselves. All that good stuff. We drink, but we don't actually drink that much alcohol on this show. We just drink enough that we have a good time. And it is not required, as always, that anybody on this show has to drink alcohol, which sometimes members of this show don't because we are aging very rapidly. Because most of us are millennials or Gen X, which is even worse. And it's just a logarithmic curve into aging at this point.
How dare!
Don't be upset, Jen. You know.
How dare!
You were literally talking about arthritis before this fucking thing started. Don't even start with me. In any case, Jen.
I'm like the youngest Gen X possible. and yet sitting here going, I think, oh, I have arthritis.
You're 8 minutes away from having to use tennis balls for a different purpose other than playing tennis.
I can't actually do that. I can't.
No, you can't.
I can't grip tennis balls.
You'll be in a motorized scooter.
I will
be. I will get you some flame stickers for when you're in one of those.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
By that time, we'll have hover scooters.
Oh, God, that would be so good.
We better. I'm going to be really mad.
Daniel, I think you'll appreciate this. Jen, you might too. Paul has said in chat, the word alcohol derives from the Arabic kol and a powder used as an eyeliner.
Alcohol comes from kol?
Did they drink the...
K-O-H-L.
K-O-H-L. No, like I mean...
Alcohol.
How the fuck?
Paul's saying yes.
Do you get from there?
Okay.
How the
fuck? Paul was there.
How the fuck do you get from there to alcohol? Like, I mean, I get it. Sure. I think he's trolling me. How do you go from eyeliner to, is it filtration? No, it's not filtration. That doesn't even make sense to me. I'm going to be looking this up. Paul better be coming with receipts is all I'm saying.
All right, Paul, we expect your 15-page paper with 47 citations
yep.
in LMLA format, not Chicago. If you do that Chicago shit, I'm going to be mad.
Yeah.
You need to submit that by the end of the night. But Jen.
Yes.
Jen.
Yes.
If you wouldn't mind, please tell folks what beverage you are drinking.
Bublé.
Michael Bublé?
You're drinking Michael Bublé? Are you sure?
Bublé.
Bubbly, you mean. Bubbly.
Does that have a bow tie?
Michael Bublé.
Bublé. Yes, it has a bow tie. Because it's fancy.
Wow, fancy.
It's fancy like Michael Bublé.
Yeah, it has a very different connotation.
I can't believe I never noticed that it has a bow tie. That's hilarious. This is the wankiest shit ever. I can't believe I drink this. It's so pretentious.
It's not, though. It's just bubbly.
It's
like, they sell it in gas stations.
Water. It's just carbonated. It's carbonated water with a whiff of flavor.
Yes, literally a whiff.
A suggestion of flavor.
Is it grape? Is it blackberry? So it's basically you're drinking blackberry farts in carbonated water.
Yes, I'm not even sure a blackberry actually farted in the presence of this water, but that's about as close as one got. It might have been in the room next door a blackberry farted.
Okay. Yeah. Wow, that's a pretty strong fart. Daniel, it is now hopefully
there's
to you.
No methane in it. I'm drinking alien secretion.
Yum. Tell
Daniel,
us about your new cocktail.
Alien
God.
Secretion.
I just want to note, alien secretion and cocktail are two things that should not be in the sentence right now.
Oh my God.
It's green and it's glowing.
That brings so many new connotations to so many alien romances that I've read.
Jen's just thinking about every sentence that's like, she was enamored by his alien secretions.
Like, no, I'm not going there. Not going there.
That's okay. Daniel, what is in this?
It's pineapple juice, coconut rum, vodka, and Midori melon liqueur.
Yes, Midori. I knew it. Good man. It's good, huh?
It's good.
It's a little foamy on the top, though.
It is a little salty on the top, but
foamy.
It is green.
Wait, salt? Never. You know what? I'm.
Surprisingly salty.
I don't even know if I can put that on TikTok. It's so dirty. I'm gonna get banned. I'm clipping it anyway, and I don't give a shit.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is alien essence cocktail.
Alien secretion cocktail.
I think
it's the Japanese melon that gives a little saltiness.
Yes. That is sometimes where the salty flavor comes from. Yes.
Yes.
It is an alien secretion from the melon, as it were.
It is green.
We're children. We're such children.
What are you drinking? Tommy Dockers.
No. So I didn't have time to really put anything together, and I have to be a little careful about alcoholic consumption because I am also old and I'm suffering from an elderly disease. But I did make an alcoholic beverage. I'm just calling this a Jimmy Schmitz because I found out that Jimmy Schmitz loves, he's a big fan of a mojito, which makes sense because he is an island descendant and they make mojitos out there. Sometimes, among other places. But I decided, since I don't have club soda, I'd make it a little more tart. So I put some straight-up tart cherry juice in there and some allspice liqueur. Just add a little oomph to it. And it is quite delicious. There's also rum, obviously, because it's a mojito. And my own mint that I grew at home.
So did you not have any cherry buble in the house?
No, that, cherry that would buble have
added,
is...
That would have added the carbonation as well.
Yep. The so, essence of cherry farts.
The essence of Jimmy Smith's flatus.
I must say that I know what the word is that you said, Daniel, but I did not go to the rear with that one. I'm thinking about his other flatus, if you know what I mean.
What the fuck has this turned into? We haven't Please, even we just started talking about the movie.
Yes.
Okay. Now we know what everybody is drinking. I'm cutting us ahead. Daniel, please tell us what the Tommyknockers is about. But if you could condense your paragraphs slightly.
Can I really? I don't.
Jesus, so... you wrote like the Wikipedia like plot entry in the skit, Daniel. It 7-8 sentences tops.
That's all you get. That's all you get. Condense it. One paragraph. Okay.
If you want to write your own, there's AO3. You can go write your own fan novel version of Tommyknocker. Yes, you can go write about Smith's Tommyknocker all you want. But right now, I need 7 to 8 sentences. Go.
Two struggling writers live in Maine with their dog, Petey. We have Guard, played by Jimmy Smith, who's a recovering alcoholic. He's a poet, but he hasn't written anything for years. His girlfriend, Bobby, writes westerns, but also has writer's block right now. Petey the dog, as far as I'm aware, is unpublished. So Bobby finds this weird stone object sticking out of the ground. So she starts digging around it out of curiosity to know what it is, and discovers these rectangular pieces that are all connected. Petey gets close to it. He's like zapped by the green alien secretion, like light energy stuff, and his eyes glow. But Guard seems unaffected, other than that he has a metal plate in his head, and so like his head starts hurting really badly when he gets near it. So once Bobby has started uncovering this thing, people in town, and there's myriad characters, start doing weird things. Their personalities kind of go to extremes, and they start inventing various machinery that has this green energy glow with it as well. And some involve like telepathy somehow, and they start hearing voices. One woman, a police officer, she hears women to kill her husband, who's actually cheating on her with a coworker at the post office, whose name is Nancy, who's played by Tracy Lords. A kid is learning magic from a magic book that he got from his grandfather, and he accidentally actually makes his brother disappear permanently, or beyond recovery at least. And then meanwhile, those machines that were created start doing weird shit as well. And the grandpa is at this point saying like, oh, it's tied to these old legends of the Tommyknockers that even the native people had legends about. So people are going crazy. There's a creepy doll collection. Vending machines blow up. Nancy, Tracy Lord, she builds this green shooting disruptor ray, like a disintegrator gun out of lipstick. And
Final Passion.
Final Passion. Final Passion. But Guard is resistant to it still. But he like pretends to be under the mind control of this object. And convinces Bobby to go searching a way to like go underground. Somehow they find like an elevator that takes them down into what is effectively this buried alien ship, and that's what's causing this all. In there, there's like some mummified aliens. They find like vats with people who have disappeared, including Grandpa and the kid who disappeared by magic, and also poor Petey the dog. And there's like crystalline growth on them or some shit. But then like some of them escape, some of them die. Guard manages to use mind control to move the spaceship out into outer space, so it comes out of the ground into space and blows up. And once it blows up, all the people that did survive are now free from the nefarious alien effects. So there's my summary. The end.
That's a full summary.
Was that fair?
It was a bit long.
It was a little long. Yeah. We got to work on this, Daniel.
Yeah.
7-8 sentences.
If okay. even that. I can that, tell you the plot of this movie.
That was like 26 that you gave us. Like 26. So.
You counted.
I'm going to speak nice to you like a student right now. Reduce it down.
I don't think he appreciates your criticism.
I'm being mean, Daniel. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
That was a very
Please
good
don't
summary.
Report me to my dean.
Should we get to our likes and our dislikes now?
Mm-hmm.
No, I feel like we could talk for another half hour about anything other than this movie. And
yeah, it would
honestly,
be pretty easy. And that would be enough. I mean, so in my opinion, we get rid of our likes and dislikes that are going to take all of like 5 minutes. And then we just chat about whatever the fuck we want to do. Because
well,
there's
on.
Really just not much
I
to say about
like
this movie.
You can summarize it all in final thoughts.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's we could give our final grades and final thoughts and then be done with this film.
No. I have a lot of likes and dislikes.
Of course you do.
Are they like complex though?
Oh yeah, yeah. So I can give you mine right now. My most complex like.
Okay, give us your most complex yeah. like.
This is really like I really need you
and
to understand.
And if you steal Mark Helgenberger from me, I'm going to be pissed off.
No. So
okay.
A lot of people don't know this, but this film is actually partly responsible for the fact that Lord of the Rings was eventually filmed in New Zealand by a fledgling director by the name of Peter Jackson. Because if you did not know, this film was filmed in New Zealand, which is my like, that everybody on this set got a free vacation to New Zealand, even though they were in a movie that was not very good. And
Wait. Are you serious?
It was filmed in New Zealand.
Okay, that's amazing, anybody... because I've been trying to figure out why the fuck Craig Parker was in this movie.
Because it was filmed in New Zealand.
So they Craig needed Parker... to film... played what character in Lord of the Rings? I can't remember. I can't remember which one in Lord of the Rings. Okay,
Craig Parker.
It was in
Haldir.
Yes. Okay.
Who the hell is Haldir? Haldir the elf.
Yeah. He's one of the not. I can't remember which movie.
Oh,
he was
he's
in
the
there.
One that dies at Helm's Deep.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
He like shows up okay. with a bunch of elves, and they're like, "Lah!" and then he goes, "Lah!"
Okay, so
he,
like, Craig
and
Parker,
he also provided the voices of Gothmog and his Skullhelmed lieutenant in The Return of the King.
So he was in Legend of the Seeker, and he's brilliant. He was also in, was it Rome or the other one, Spartacus?
Spartacus.
Yeah.
Yeah. He
okay.
was Legatus.
And, excellent actor, yeah. but. In this, and I didn't even recognize him until I went through, like, the actual cast, and I was sitting here going, what the fuck? Craig Parker was in that? Where the fuck was Craig Parker? He's the student bartender. And you can't even recognize... It's like, I couldn't even recognize him. He's so young.
Yeah.
In this film. That I was like... I had to go back and, like, check repeatedly and, like, stare at him for multiple minutes.
Because he's a baby.
He looks nothing like he looks like as an adult. Like, yeah. his face has
that's
changed
interesting
so much.
Because he
it was
like,
weird.
Did a good job acting, like, still being, like, enamored yeah. with Jimmy Smits, even after Jimmy Smits went, like, all asshole.
Yeah, no.
And drunken.
Yeah.
He was, like, still, this is the greatest guy I want to be like. And you believed it.
You believed him. Like, yeah, I like yeah. this guy. He's a good
That's a
guy.
Good point.
He's a good All guy. Right. But he was 23 years old. And I just, I was, no, it made no sense to me. And now that I know that, so then, you know, he goes on to play Haldir in Lord of the Rings, another great New Zealand transplant.
Well, I mean, whatever. I do want to just know that you totally entirely hijacked my like, so I appreciate that, Jen. So
what, you were gonna say that you liked that Craig Parker was in this movie?
No. I happen to have an essay written about
yeah
this
we don't actually give a shit
on Lord of the Rings. Wow. So I did all this research for no reason.
Yeah, you did all this research
that
for
that if
literally
not for
no
the
reason.
Failure of this mini series
I'm pretty sure that this did not establish the entirety of the New Zealand film industry.
Okay, it did, and I will prove to you right now. A lot of people have not made this
connection. Wasn't Heavenly Creatures really what did it?
Yeah, I'm
like, no. Heavenly Creatures is important, but Heavenly Creatures comes after.
Wasn't
this,
it things
Heavenly,
like, I don't know, Xena?
Like a year, it came out a year later.
Yeah.
Xena and Hercules and Legend of the Seeker.
Let me fucking do it. Come on. God dang it. I had planned and you're just destroying my bit.
Oh,
bastard.
I'm sorry. Please do go on.
Damn it. So this film was filmed in New Zealand because they had a budgetary limit. And so they had to find where to film it because the U.S. was too expensive. So they went to film in New Zealand because they needed to find a place that looked vaguely New England. And so they did in New Zealand. Arguably, it doesn't really look New England, but whatever. on literally the second day of filming, the original director, Lewis Teague, was fired. And then they had seas and seas of problems because on the one hand, they had to bring in all this stuff from the U.S. that it turns out is kind of difficult, like flammable materials and all kinds of stuff that had to be imported because the industry in New Zealand didn't exist for this yet. That took up a whole bunch of their budget. And then they had problems because most of their crew were from New Zealand. But because the New Zealand film industry hadn't yet been developed yet, they had all these problems where they had basically inexperienced crew as part of their 200-member crew to make this film. And so they're doing all of this work. They're basically training all these people that would go on to help build up the New Zealand film industry. And then the next year, you get a little-known director at the time, Peter Jackson, makes Heavenly Creatures, which naturally helps build up, again, the New Zealand film industry. And then several years later, he gets the permission to begin filming Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, and all of the rest of them, essentially all at once, which I believe filming starts in 1999, which is just a few more years later. And so thus, this film had a very significant, albeit not by anyone's intention, impact on the New Zealand film industry. And so I thank you to Jimmy Smits for accepting a free vacation at a point in your career when you could have done something better with your life. And
he
I do think,
a house.
Yeah, I do thank Stephen King as well, who probably agreed to allow this terrible book to be filmed because he was on cocaine. And I also thank John Power for directing this film, because as a result, we now have Lord of the Rings, one of the greatest film franchise in the history of mankind. I rest my case.
They should have had you at the Academy Award for Return of the King. You could have given this acceptance speech and thanked the Tommyknockers for making it all possible.
I feel like...
Now you know.
I still feel like you're trolling me, because the New Zealand
Film
Commission...
You can't tell.
...was established in 1978, which I feel like was a little bit... Before that, and
name one movie before Heavenly Creatures from New Zealand that you know.
One movie.
I rest my case.
I'm sorry. Have you not seen any of other Peter Jackson's other films that preceded Heavenly Creatures?
Name one movie that you're not looking at IMDb right now, you bastard.
I forget the name of his film.
Meet the Feebles.
Oh, Brain Dead.
Dead
no,
alive?
Bad taste. Bad
brain
taste.
Dead? Oh, Brain Dead.
Bad
the
taste?
Film you didn't
yeah.
remember
bad
till you
taste.
Looked on IMDb
I always,
right now.
I don't know the names of his damn movies. I just know that they're hilarious because they're some of the best horror ever made.
I still haven't seen
Brain Dead.
The Feebles.
Pretty good movie. The Feebles is all right. It's not too bad. It's got its issues. I think Heavenly Creatures is his most interesting film, but obviously Lord of the Rings is his magnum opus. So.
Sure. Yeah, also... It's completely ignoring things like Xena and Hercules.
Yeah, it doesn't
When
count.
Were they?
Xena, well, let's see, Hercules.
Hercules would have been first.
Hi, yeah. Mom. My mom is now in chat, just FYI.
Hercules started in, I guess, 95.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I rest my case.
Yeah, that's for later.
I rest my case.
I mean, there were things before.
We
Hercules.
Wouldn't have. In fact, you just helped me make my second point, yeah, which is that we wouldn't have Hercules and Xena without this movie.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Yeah. Because, you know, no films had ever been made in New Zealand before this film.
Look, sometimes you just have to accept the loss, Jen.
Okay, sure. We'll pretend I'm going to do that.
I mean,
as
it's
I silently judge you.
Everybody knows. Everybody knows.
I'll just silently judge you.
You happen to have a light.
I do. I had like a bunch that I counted up, but they're pretty much minor things. So I get one. I know. There's a comment about the brother. If he could just get the, if the other brother would just come back, he would give him like his G.I. Joe collection. And I love that reference. And I really found it interesting that the G.I. Joes he mentions are like, God, now I'm Snake Eyes, who like everybody knows. But then he mentions Crystal Ball. Do you know Crystal Ball? The character or the action figure? So no, he's not a common G.I. Joe, but there's this rumor that the Crystal Ball action figure was designed by Stephen King and Stephen King's son, or one of the sons, because he has more than one son, right? There's like Joe Hill, but I thought there's maybe others. Anyway, one of the sons of Stephen King and Stephen King apparently designed this character who then Hasbro made into a G.I. Joe action figure. So he's a pretty forgettable character. I don't think he ever appeared in the cartoon, at least not the original cartoon series. And the fact that they threw out that mention in a Stephen King adaptation, I thought was a little clever. So I enjoyed that reference. There's my like.
That's your like?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good like.
So he does have another son named Owen.
Owen, that's it. Owen King. I think it was Owen that... if I remember correctly, but it's been a while since I looked that up.
Owen is also a novelist.
Good to know.
You're welcome. His latest book is The Curator, that was out in March 2023.
That's exciting.
Yes, it was Owen.
That's a very random fact that you're aware of, Daniel.
Yes.
Do you collect G.I. Joes?
As it's told, Crystal Ball was pitched to Hasbro by Steven because his young son, Owen, was such a huge fan of the line.
Huh.
He apparently pitched the character's origin and even wrote his file card.
Do you collect G.I. Joes? Daniel, is that why you know this?
No, I mean, I had them when I was a kid. Right now, I only have one, Dr. Mindbender. And he's currently in a bag in pieces because his rubber band broke.
That's
and
so sad.
And so I need to get Dr. Mindbender a new rubber band to put him back together again.
That is also like the nerdiest.
But he was the mad scientist, like geneticist. So what?
Oh, of course he is.
That was the nerdiest.
Is he the reason you became a bacteria scientist? Is that it?
Oh no. just a coincidence.
It's just a coincidence.
I'm sorry, Sean.
Trying to make an emperor. I'm not trying to clone like all of history's greatest people into like something to take over the world.
No, but okay. So
not yet. So anyway,
hold on. Well, now I'm trying to think. What would have made Daniel become a bacteria scientist? What film, Jen, do you think would have done it? Well, when did you go to graduate school? What year?
2001.
2001. Okay, so that's definitely... Oh, hold on.
9/11 was like a month into my grad school.
I mean, it would have been that...
I know what you're thinking of, Jen, and that's exactly what I'm thinking of, too. And I'm trying to remember what that film is called. Outbreak. Outbreak.
Outbreak. No. Oh my God. It's not Outbreak.
No, I've never seen Outbreak, actually. But we need a like from Jen. Or was your like Craig? Was Craig
that
your
Craig
like?
Parker was in this? No. I will say that I did really love this cast because it's such a weird assortment of actors, all of whom are really good separately from this movie. like specifically Mark Helgenberger, like I have to say she carried this movie, like single-handedly carried the film. Jimmy Smits is great.
Jimmy Smits.
No. It really wasn't Jimmy Smits. Mm. Like as much as I love Jimmy Smits, Marg Helgenberger sold what was happening more than any other actor in the movie, more than any other aspect of this movie. She sold it. And she's,
Tracy Lords?
I'm pretty sure it wasn't Tracy Lords that sold this movie.
Tracy Lords is the like,
yeah, Nancy. No,
lady.
I mean, she
yeah.
was fine, but it's Tracy Lords. She's only
she
so good.
She just kind of played Tracy Lords.
She just kind of yeah. played Tracy Lords, I don't know. Which
it was
is who
the most
she
believable.
Plays, which is fine, but like, Marg Helgenberger was so much better than the script and the rest of the film that it was almost painful to be like, Marg, why are you in this movie? But at the same time, I question her career on so many levels because obviously she was brilliant in CSI. But I'm like, why isn't Marg Helgenberger, especially after watching this, it reminded me, why isn't she a better known actress overall? Also, I'm delighted by the fact that her mother was in this movie and played the old lady with the shop, I'm pretty sure. That was fun. But yeah,
vaguely remember an old lady.
The old lady who has the shop and she invents the silver polisher.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then she pretends to be the sheriff.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That was fun.
I'm pretty sure that's Marg's mom. Yeah, that's what I'm going to go with. I'm going to go with the cast, but specifically Marg Helgenberger, for sure.
I do have to ask Daniel a question, though, before you move
PD,
on.
PD, though, too. PD was good.
PD was fantastic, yeah.
Yeah. PD was fun. But Daniel, I am correct that The Andromeda Strain was the film that really did it.
No.
Right?
I've never seen The Andromeda Strain.
What the fuck, Daniel?
I honestly am now starting to question your scientific journey of how you
got
there.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Sean, the fact that Andromeda Strain wasn't your first like thought, I'm kind of like, okay. I'm boggled.
Well, I'm going to be honest, Outbreak's a better movie, but still.
Obviously, but...
Not a better book?
No.
No. Okay. But I don't... Who knows?
It's hard to say because they're like from like different sort of generations and like levels of knowledge. I'd say Outbreak is probably
the
90s, but it's probably more scientifically...
The novel's earlier than... No.
Yeah, but the
Andromeda
film is
was early
much...
Too, yeah,
Andromeda was pretty early.
Andromeda's the 70s.
Right.
I would say Outbreak.
But Outbreak was written, I thought, in the 70s, too.
Mm. Yeah, but the film is...
The film is completely
feels
different.
Feels more modern.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it written that early, Outbreak?
Maybe it was
I don't remember what it's... Yeah. Something like that. Who knows? It does.
I thought it was
point
written
is,
later.
Now...
Sorry.
Oh, yeah. It was 1987.
Yeah, that's what
okay,
I thought.
So I do have a... That's not that late.
Oh,
yeah.
That was... Well, for some reason, I thought that was by Crichton, not Robin Cook. Okay, never mind.
No. The Outbreak's Robin Cook, and then, the Andromeda Strain is Crichton.
What the hell did Crichton write that I'm thinking of, then?
Andromeda
that they
Strain.
Also adapted later into a movie, though, other than Jurassic Park.
That was similar to Outbreak?
I thought.
There is
oh,
a
I
film,
don't know.
And I
mean,
can't remember
they,
right
oh,
now.
I'm thinking of Congo. I'm thinking of Congo.
Congo,
oh,
yeah.
Congo
yeah,
with
yeah,
the,
yeah,
the
yeah.
Girls.
Yeah. 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 That's what I was thinking.
Real quick, in chat, while we move on to our dislikes, I would like your headcanons for which film was instrumental in turning Daniel into a bacterial scientist. I don't know if that's your official title, Daniel,
you know,
but that's like
the
my
fact
best way of describing what you do.
Daniel that Daniel has neither seen Andromeda Strain or Outbreak, I'm starting to question whether a film had anything to do with Daniel
it's probably Saturn 9.
Becoming a... bacteriologist.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it was like Clueless. Maybe he saw Clueless and was like, ah, bacteria. That's where I need to go. We've got The Blob as an option in there. Was it The Blob,
Daniel?
Oh,
The Blob. Mm. Mm.
I did really like The Blob as a kid. Yes.
Did that, it, was that the instrumental?
That did not result in my...
Okay. Give us a hint. Is the film that was instrumental... in any way related to science, or is it non-science?
Or was it a film at all?
It was not a film.
Yeah.
It was not a film.
Was it a book?
No.
Okay, there we go. Now we have
it was
absolutely...
a G.I. Joe.
Yeah, it was...
Nope.
It was the Mind Hunter. Obviously.
Was it E.T.?
There was... So, not specifically
E.T.
bacteria, but in general, getting to science, There was a TV show that definitely had a huge impact.
A TV show?
A TV show.
There was a TV show that had a big impact for me getting into science. Getting into bacteria was by happenstance of what lab I chose to rotate in grad school, which was the randomness of who I had as a professor in one of my courses, and it, and somebody else that was working in the lab. That was...
Still, it was a TV show that got him into science.
But a TV show got me into science.
Interesting.
Power Rangers.
I was too old for Power Rangers.
Yeah.
Okay. TV show. What could it be,
but
Jen?
We got to get to our...
No, we don't. No. We have to solve this riddle.
No, we really don't, actually. We don't have to solve this. We could just ask. Daniel, what was the TV show? Don't tell us. The crowd is guessing right now.
This is too much fun. They're still guessing, yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, I can announce it at the end.
Is it related to science,
this
TV
show? If nobody gets it, it's indirectly related to science.
Indirectly related to
science. What does that
mean?
The character exemplified things related to science that got me interested in certain parts of science. They've made a remake of the TV show as well.
MacGyver!
Quantum Leap!
Bingo.
I guessed it!
God, it's... MacGyver.
No, that makes sense. I get it. Yeah. I totally get it. I
wanted to study chemistry and such.
You know,
Daniel wanted to be able to blow things up with chemistry.
I just kind of, I thought Daniel had like a super villain backstory that he wasn't telling us about. And like, no, it turns out Daniel's just normal.
Yeah, just nerd.
Yeah, I like how Sean said something earlier about how that was the nerdiest thing he had ever heard. Well, we're on a Skiffy and Fanty Show podcast.
Fanty Show, yes.
This show isn't nerdy at all. We're pretty mainstream, guys.
Totally mainstream.
Pretty mainstream. Normal. Did you know Dwayne The Rock Johnson actually listens? True story.
The Rock.
Is Dwayne The Rock Johnson a lizard that somebody has with them while they're watching the show or listening to the show?
No. He sends us emails every once in a while. Says he really likes the show.
Is he also asking for money?
No, actually, not really. No,
that's interesting.
I had to ask somebody today.
In a while.
No, I haven't. But I look forward to his presidential run when he mentions the Skippy and Fanty show as inspiration for his campaign.
I will just note, Dwayne The Rock Johnson is more than welcome to come on this show at any time. If you would love to talk about the Scorpion King with us, let's freaking do it.
Let's do it.
I would love to hear what it was like. Early in your film career, doing the main heading role in an action flick. That's exciting.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson, you're welcome to join. We'll drink your Zoa drink on stream. Let's do it.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad he's listening. Okay, so let's get to our dislikes of the Tommy Knockers. Shall we?
Yeah.
Sean,
what is your dislike?
Oh, I'm first.
Mine?
No. I'm first because I went last. So I guess my dislike is the alien design. Because at first I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Because they actually have cool like legs that actually reminded me. And I have a feeling were kind of part of the inspiration for at least one of the species in the Mass Effect series. However, they otherwise made no sense when you consider the fact that they are a population of aliens that use entirely... telepathy to communicate, and apparently telepathy to like infect people and make them do things for them, because they were far too physical and imposing and strong, even though like the body was like weightless and like, but like theoretically they had like big bladed weapons, they were clearly kind of warlike, you know, there were all of these things that just didn't really track with how that they were interacting with their environment. Also, the ship design made zero sense whatsoever, but, you know, we'll not go there. And it was kind of disappointing considering the fact that this is one part of the adaptation that I really kind of was like, I wish they had gotten a little bit more inspiration from the books, from the book, I should say. Because in the book, there is a reason that they use there is a reason that they use telepathy. Excuse me, I can't speak all of a sudden. And there is a reason that they're affecting people in the way that they are, right? Like, there's a whole concept of they have no morals, essentially, is what I read about. I haven't read Tommyknockers, but that idea is kind of intriguing. And I wish I had we'd seen more of it. But, like, my specific dislike is the design of the alien life form itself. It just did not track with everything else that was happening in terms of how they interacted with the world. It was just kind of, like, strange and didn't really match with how I would have designed an alien species that relied on telepathy to interact with their environment, I guess.
I mean, they did change significant parts from what I understand.
Well, obviously the book, from the adaptation. Yeah, I just, like, in the end, like, I was really hoping to like the design of the aliens, and it's just kind of like, they were more like aliens, the aliens from Alien, than they were a species that theoretically is exceedingly intelligent, which is not to say that the aliens in Alien are not also exceedingly intelligent, but they clearly are, like, heavily scientific. And these guys are not predators. They're not, and yet they were basically shaped like predators.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That seemed weird to me, like, ultimately.
Well, I'm curious, because now I'm very... I'm trying to look now about, like, what we know from the book, but, like, to be fair, nobody gives a shit about this book.
So, yeah, yeah. He
was just... It wasn't well-regarded in the first place. But it is based on folklore, because the knocker, knocker-knacker, or Tommyknocker, is a mythological from Cornish and Devon folklore that's like a gnome thing that lives down there. I'm sure it's in my book of small and little creatures that I have that are from that area.
But it's so loosely based on that. It's
like, so loosely, like, the name comes from
the
there,
name
but
comes
that's...
from that. The fact that there's something living in the woods essentially comes
and
from
there's
that.
Local legends and
local legends but other than that, like, the book itself doesn't seem to have anything to do with the actual Cornish Tommyknockers.
No, it really doesn't.
But there are...
It's very confusing.
I actually kind of want to read the Tommyknockers, because from the Wikipedia, it does look like there's some really interesting concepts that Stephen King was working with if he was in any way, shape, or form sober while writing the book, which he wasn't.
Probably not.
At all.
Yeah, and it really doesn't, slightly. This book, unlike some of the other ones he's written, really doesn't have much in the way of connection to the, like, King verse, because, like, a whole bunch of King's novels are, like, interconnected, even if, like, the novel itself is not really part of that larger mythology, but there are references in a bunch of his books to some of the larger conflicts that are explored more explicitly in, like, the Dark Tower series. So, like, It, for example, is directly related to the Dark Tower series, because is it Maritan, who's the turtle god, is one of the main protagonists.
The only thing that is connected, as far as I can tell, I don't know if it's actually in the book, but it is in the film, is the setting, which is Haven, which is the setting of a number of his stories.
Right. Yeah, it's unclear if it has any... I don't think it has any obvious connection. Or if it does, it's one of those things where it's kind of irrelevant.
I'm actually curious, and I'd have to go back, how much of an influence this had on the Haven television series, which draws from a lot of different Stephen King novels, including having aliens and all sorts of other... It's basically like... The TV series is basically the Stephen King multiverse occurring in one small town. So it was a good series. In any case, I thought it was.
Fun fact, they're trying to bring this, do a new adaptation of this.
Why, though?
Well, Stephen King is, his adaptations of his work are having a renaissance at the moment. Because, yeah, so it doesn't necessarily start with the It films, but It kind of breaks open
right,
the door.
Right.
And there have been a number of film adaptations. Yeah, Gerald's Game, the one that's the date. I can't remember the date off the top of my head.
That's
there are a
right.
bunch of miniseries.
Kennedy's Assassination.
Like, not all of them have landed. Like, the new version of The Stand is... I actually don't remember if I finished it, because...
11-22-63.
Yeah, 11-22-63. Yeah, there's been a bunch, though, and a lot of them are well-regarded. There's even, more recently, the adaptation of the sequel to The Shining, which the name of that one has escaped me.
Dr. Sleep,
which has Ewan McGregor in it.
Yeah.
So he's going through this phase where like people are like, oh, like Stephen King, we can.
Yeah,
like,
but it
he's
feels
a hot
like,
commodity. Let's make movies.
It feels like they're still adapting some of his better works.
They're also adapting works that are like impossible to adapt, like It. Like, seriously? You can't adapt It. It's impossible.
He also expressed interest in revisiting the Tommyknockers, apparently.
Yeah, I did see that.
Because of those reasons you're talking about, Jen, of, like, he thinks there's interesting ideas in it. It just got cocained.
Yeah.
And so, going back to it...
What? That's the description? It got cocained?
I mean, that's, like, the most accurate description of what happened to this book, so...
Wow! It would be interesting to see, but...
Yeah, I mean... Like I said, I think the movie itself has, like... almost zero of the concepts that happen in the book. It has like...
I mean, the biggest thing is the ending. The ending
well,
in
the
this
ending
book,
is completely different, yeah.
It's kind of a stark difference, because in the book,
everybody dies. Everybody dies.
Pretty much everybody, except like the kid who like disappeared shows up in the hospital again.
Yes.
Like, Jimmy Smith's basically like, well, his character, Guard, basically sacrifices everybody because he realizes like his wife is no longer lives, like she's not really human
I mean
anymore.
They're
she's been,
none
like,
of them are
over. None of them are, and so they
nobody
all die.
In town this, like, is
right they're all basically dead in this. They make the decision where a few people die, but mostly everybody just kind of like wakes up from a bad dream, including the guy from A Revenge of the Nerds who is weirdly rapey in this one than in Revenge of the Nerds, which is kind of gross, but there is that.
Are you talking about Robert Carradine?
Is that him? Is that the guy?
Yeah.
Revenge of the Nerds guy? Oh, well, he's terrible in this. I don't know what the hell he was doing.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he's bad. I'm just telling you. Anyway,
there were a lot of people that were really bad, but like the actors that are actually good actors also were pretty good in this. I was so excited to see Joanna Cassidy. I can't even tell you, because she's lovely and delightful, although her dolls are not.
Oh my God. But her romance with
Duggan was adorable.
Yes. Oh my God. It's so cute. The second that came out, Daniel was there. The second that came out, I was like, oh, please, for the love of God, just go on a date. Because, like, the cutest thing is, like, their two deputies are like, oh, my God, he's like, so sweet. Or, like, you're going to take a chance. You're going to take a chance. And then they go on, like, a little cute, like, middle-aged date. And it's just adorable.
With their little ice cream. Until Nancy and the awful husband ruin the date because...
Yeah,
he's cheating on his wife.
Why
her deputy.
Why is she seeing him?
I don't know. And you know what? Actually, one of my favorite parts of the movie was actually her interaction with the television. I have to say.
You mean Becca?
The wife.
Interaction with the television. That was clever. That was really, really clever, and it worked very well.
Kill him. What should we do, contestant number one? Kill him. Very fun.
I'm just glad she found some, you know, counsel in the end from the television. Because, the television was absolutely right. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That TV was not
wrong.
Can we
admit, though?
And then they put her in the madhouse.
And then they put her in the madhouse. Well, she goes mad, apparently, because she... like for real, and frankly that's a good thing because it means she's probably out of town when the rest of the shit goes down.
Yeah,
so, when you think about it though, it does sound mad if you say my TV game show host told me to kill my husband. Comes,
Not just the host, like all the contestants.
All the contestants also.
Yeah.
But
generally, they don't take kindly to that kind of admission.
No, they don't.
It was like the match game.
And yet, mad props, TV. You were the only one that gave good advice.
I mean, can we just say that, like, her husband, you know, at first it's like, oh, he's kind of a piece of crap because he's cheating on his wife, right? And it's like, that's bad.
It's
but,
way
like,
more than
people
that.
Do dumb things, and, like, it's kind of that's not that you necessarily sympathize with him, but you're like, that's not enough to kill him. Like, you should just divorce your wife, and, like, maybe you just shouldn't be together. But then he goes from that to, I am a sexist piece of garbage. Like, he talks to his wife like, why didn't you iron all my shirts? It's like, she's got a full-time job. What are you talking about?
He literally treats her like a piece of garbage. And
says horrible things.
He's also having his awful things. Meanwhile, he's having like this sexual like awakening with his, you know, new boss at the post office, which like, fine, you fall in love with someone else, just divorce your wife, as you say, whatever. I don't care. You're a piece of shit for lying to your wife. And you're also a piece of shit for treating your wife like a piece of shit.
Yep. It's the treating part that I think makes it harder for us to think that the wife's wrong. Even though, like, I think we would all agree, like, you still shouldn't murder. But, like, but still, it's like we don't sympathize with him when he's electrocuted to death by the TV.
Daniel, please go ahead.
So, 2 points. One, it's unfortunate she doesn't kill him. The TV kind of doesn't.
Yeah.
And so I was somewhat disappointed by that. But it's not just the cheating and the treat. Be going way beyond that and also just being an utter dick in every aspect. It's not just to his wife either, because there's the line that he says to Nancy while they're in bed together of, oh, it's a good thing this boy is less missing. Hopefully he'll stay missing longer because that's keeping my wife away because she's a police officer. She's looking for the missing kid. And he's like happy that the kid is missing and hopes that he stays missing long so that they can, you know, clandestinely meet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, just
I think
so
that's necessary,
like,
though.
That is,
but we need that.
It just
piles it on. Like, it's the one murder where we're like, this is a good murder.
Almost,
it makes sense. It makes sense why. I'm not saying it's justified. I still don't think
it's 100%. No, I'm sorry. Totally justified. I agree with this murder. More murders like this should take place. It's the only justified murder in the movie, though.
I'm not going to go that far. But I will say this, that this film inadvertently does something smart, which is it shows varying degrees of the mind manipulation by the aliens and kind of reveals that Becca is, in fact, a very good person.
Yeah.
Who is manipulated into doing something very bad because it's preying on her emotions. And then she basically breaks as a consequence of that, because that's not who Becca is.
Right.
She's not really capable of those kinds of things. And so she snaps, basically. But other people, we know that their moral framework is super flawed. And so when they get manipulated by the aliens, it isn't that many steps they need to fall before they become monsters. Nancy would be the example of that, because somehow she makes her lipstick into like a super laser that kills people. And she kills lots of people without any real, like, there's no like justification of any kind other than they might discover the alien, so I must kill them.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, which is like unfortunate, because it's like, it's the sad reality of the Tracy Lord's career, that she was always sexualized for every part that she's like basically ever given. And this was early on in her film career, like actual film career. And she's a very one note character, frankly, but it is nice having like sort of that contrast between she's pegged as the immoral character, as, you know, as much as it sucks that, like, you know, hot woman immoral is bad. That's bad. Don't do that in your films. Not hot woman is moral. That's bad. Don't do that contrast. Normal things. don't do that. However, it did work, as you say, in this film because of how... Sorry about that. Because of how it's... The reactions of those two people to what the aliens are doing to them. And I think that's the one place that you see some of the concepts that might have been in the book come through. But it's not explored any further than that, so it doesn't really matter.
Whose dislike are we on, by the way? We have just, like, God wandered. Only knows.
Oh,
what's happening?
Daniel's.
It's Daniel. Daniel, what's your dislike, please?
My dislike is, well, the casual misogyny even beyond that character that we talked about. But I guess my dislike is also just, it's a dislike of Stephen King's work in general, often. His characters. He loves depicting loathsome people. Characters that are not just flawed or have issues, but... you see them become like the worst aspects of humanity at points. And so even a character like Jimmy Smith's Guard, he's trying to get over being an alcoholic, but then he fails and he becomes like an utter terrible person. And so Stephen King's work often shows, even the heroes are anti-heroes very often. And I don't necessarily love that about Stephen King. And I think a lot of his books often fail in terms of being good adaptations, because I think it works better. His explorations into the psyche of humans works way better on page than it does on a movie, because it's easier to read about people that are shit than it is to see people acting like shit to each other. And there's a harshness to the characters that I don't think translates well to film. Unless you do it like Stanley Kubrick did it. Is the one kind of like how he moved that. He did it in a more artful way, I think, for film. That he divorced it enough from the written version for the film. So I don't know if it's universal per se, because I'm sure that there are characters that aren't necessarily like that. But by and large, Stephen King's characters tend to be pretty contemptible. And even if they have moments of goodness, they have moments where, like, the worst parts of human nature come out, even in the good people, in quotes.
I'm not a Stephen King expert. This is where we need David. Because, like, David's probably read everything that Stephen King's released and, like, written novel length analysis of his. I'm teasing David. He probably hasn't done this. But it kind of occurs to me that at times King does this, but the problem I think we're struggling with is really that with King, his novels have narrative structures that don't translate to film. So, like, The Shining would be a really good example of this, because The Shining's a tragedy. We know right from the start things are going to go wrong, but it's not because Jack Torrance is a bad person. It's that Jack Torrance has made mistakes and he's trying to be the man that his wife wants him to be, that he needs to be for his son. He's trying to deal with his alcoholism. He's trying to be the good man. He's trying all of that. And we know that those cracks are there, and that's what's going to be exploited by the supernatural. And that's the tragedy, is watching him fall apart and be taken apart from the inside by this the hotel, basically, and its ghosts. But the problem is, on film, that's so hard to make work, because we're not used to true tragedies. Like, horror to some degree always is, but even horror has been sort of overtaken by the idea that someone survives at the end, right? And that survival is, like, that's the point of the, like, the final girl narrative and all of these kinds of things, where someone survives, they've gone through a horrible ideal, but it's because they've overcome. And with tragedy, it's often the opposite. If anyone survives, it's not because they overcame anything. They've been left. They're the leftover, right? The problem with The Shining is that at the end, Jack Torrance fails and completely falls apart and destroys everything and nearly kills his family. We're meant to sympathize with that, even as we can recognize that the horrors of what he's committing and the trauma he's eventually producing, which is why I think some of the later Dr. Sleep is somewhat of an interesting sequel to The Shining, because it actually tries to deal with the aftermath of that on the part of his son. But that's not universally all of his novels. Sometimes he just has like really inappropriate orgies because he was on cocaine. But like, I think that's part of it. It's like the narrative structures he's into don't translate to film, because film generally isn't about those kinds of things. Maybe we'll get that today, because there's a little bit more willingness, especially in the miniseries, to explore narratives that don't have those kind of very standardized plots and endpoints. But I could be wrong.
But yeah, the characters, yeah, and through that arc and the narrative structure, the characters succumb to the darkness. They succumb to those things, even if they fail in being able to rise above their frailties and their, and that I can read it much easier than I can watch it.
Well, because it's
to some extent, because it's poorly, it's harder to do in a visual way, I would say.
They try here, because they show multiple occasions where Guard fails to fight his alcoholism. But like the first time we learn he's an alcoholic, he goes to a meeting and then he goes to his little poetry thing and he gets some like snide remarks about reading something that everybody loved. He gives in like immediately. Like
right.
The fight is over, and then later on he's fighting and fighting instead of having that like rising moment where he finally fails, and then he's like, I have to overcome this. I have to fight it again. And the aliens make that even harder and harder. It's sort of like backwards.
The development is abrupt. And then because it's this movie, they try to make it where people live, right? Where it's not utter destruction and not everybody succumbs. Guard becomes a hero, right? Even Bobby, she suddenly has this moment of clarity and rationalism and becomes saved from the alien influence, maybe to some degree. And so
magically healed.
Magically healed. And so
gets all her
teeth
like, back.
It's not earned. It's not earned. They make them look like terrible people, but then all of a sudden they're good and it's all fine. I have difficulty with that.
I really hope Carradine actually did die. Although they don't show it. You see the mother with PED. Not PD, the kid that's not PD, but they all have
David,
kid
names. Davy.
Okay, you see the mother with Davy, you do not see the father. And what has just happened that they don't show is that Tracy Lord has found her new victim in the final, 10 minutes of the movie, and that happens to be Robert Carradine's character, who is the father of one child who's in the hospital with like a giant brain tumor in a coma, and another child that has been gone for we aren't even sure how long, but days at this point at least. And he just like flings off all of his, inhibitions and is like, hot lady. And that's that. He ends up like killing himself. Oh, that's right. He does. He ends up killing himself. I forgot. He does die. Never mind. Ignore me.
Does he die?
He gets his comeuppance. No. He shoots at the thing and her death ray kills him, bounces back and kills him.
Okay.
So, like instant karma, so to speak.
Well, and that's again, like, the thing that the novel tries to deal with is like all the people, like they try to do it in the film, but it just kind of falls a little bit flat. But like all the people are being mind screwed, right? They've been taken over. And in the book, it's not just that they've been mind screwed. They've stopped being human. They become the Tommyknockers, essentially.
Right.
And in this, like it kind of never gets to that point. They're going through changes, but like you can chalk that up to their brains have been messed up with and they're just not taking care of themselves because they're like in a trance kind of. But then, okay, but is that all it is? It's just a trance or is there something else going on here?
You don't really get the descent into immorality. You get hints of it in this, But Mark Helgenberger's character never really becomes completely immoral. I mean, like, in the book, apparently she actually experiments on Petey.
She's she does in the she does in the movie.
She,
so.
I mean, she you does, but it's it. All off screen, so you
it's
don't.
Off screen. Yeah.
And she's so earnest the rest of the time that it's really difficult to actually like say that those that's her that did it. Yeah. It's much easier to separate her from the actions that she committed. Whereas with at least a couple of the other characters, you're like, okay, that's actually, that's you. That is you. That's you. That's the immoral version of you. Like Tracy Lord's character, Robert Carradine's character, possibly some others.
What about
but...
the cute couple, her doll collection?
Oh, screw those
like,
dolls.
That seemed totally incongruous to me.
So they don't get affected, though.
Because he lives outside of town.
He lives outside
in, like, the
of town. Yeah, and she is barely affected. And we can only assume it's because if from the book, this is would have been kind of the truth that is happening, is that she is exceedingly moral and therefore getting her to become
not as susceptible,
not as susceptible to the aliens, because ultimately
but they pervert the dolls.
But they pervert the dolls nonetheless. They figure out a way to still kill her.
This creepy collection for
and why? Who knows? That
just
feels,
made no sense to me.
No, it
oh,
made
that's
no
right.
sense.
They do kill her okay. and they ruined romance.
Yeah,
yeah.
They
ruined no
monsters.
Well, she disappeared. Did she ever come back?
No, she was one of the people in
dead?
The she was dead, presumably. She's in one of the tanks.
Yeah.
Okay.
She dies differently. She gets killed by her dolls and then like I
becomes
guess,
a human battery.
She becomes like a human battery question mark. And then her love interest gets blown up by a Coca-Cola. Not Coca-Cola.
Yes.
Whatever the off-brand name is they came up with.
Yeah,
Cola or whatever it's
Cola.
Is obviously just Coke.
Cola?
Yeah, and his hand gets trapped mystically inside of the apparatus.
No, it's not mystically.
It
the garage owner.
It has a gripper thing.
Specifically, modifies it because everybody somehow gets the super intelligence and can do the alien inventions. So he modifies the machine. You see him working on it.
I know, you're right. Yeah. I completely forgot that of all the other things that people needed to make for appropriate reasons, that was a thing they made conveniently, like they just knew he's going to stick his hand in there. Magic.
Well, they
really,
did.
They could have just
there
said
was a
that
whole
that's how the company screen. Made the machine.
Oh, well, fair enough. No.
All right, what is your dislike?
My dislike? oh, God. Honestly, there are a lot of things I don't like what they did to Petey, which makes me mad because I don't like that like animal experimentation stuff in narratives. But the thing
Petey
that
lived.
Actually gets me, he does live. And conveniently enough, all the experimentation amounts to not much because they just like take
Hooks
it him off
up.
Him and then he just runs away like it's normal.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, why is he complaining so much? Because he's like doing this in the air. And it's like, but you're not even like hooked into anything, really. Like, stop complaining, dog. But anyway. The thing I'm actually mad about is a thing that really drives me nuts, which is like anytime somebody tries to represent what the world of the arts is like or professorships or any of those things, like anything humanities oriented, they come
the
up with
poetry circuit,
the poetry circuit. Like, so.
Oh, it was circuit.
A poetry circuit.
I really thought they said circus poet.
Oh, no.
Yes, he's just showing up at Ringham and Barley.
It's the poetry circus. It's the poetry circus.
I thought he wanted to be a circus poet. Like it was a circus clown, only he did poetry.
Yeah. It's Cirque du Soleil, but for poetry.
Whatever that is, like Cirque du Poet, or whatever we're going to call
Cirque
it.
Cirque du Poet.
Poésie.
Yeah, there you go. Cirque du Poésie. And it's just a bunch of like people on top of pyramids of contortionists reading poems. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'd pay to see that.
I mean, it would be kind of fun, I will admit. But like, anytime you get these things, they have this perception of what the arts is like that is utterly bizarre. Like the idea that there's this circuit of poets that like go around and they're being paid by this like foundation to write poetry and like they just go around giving poetry readings. And
it was
then...
the 80s, baby. Maybe they did. I don't know.
No, that can't be a thing in the 80s. Like, come on. I've never heard of this.
I honestly don't know.
They're like in like a high school gymnasium giving this talk. I mean, it's supposed to be a college or whatever, but it's clearly a high school gymnasium. And reading poetry, and then there's a standing ovation. And I'm sorry, I have seen only a handful of standing ovations for poetry in my entire life. And they have all been at major events, like, for example, the fucking crowning of a new president of the United States. You get it at the fucking standing ovation when Gorman gave her poetry reading for the Biden win, right? Like, yeah, okay, that makes sense because, like, you know, the moment calls for it. But, like, some fucking high school gymnasium poetry reading and they're giving a standing ovation to some, like, weird love poem he reads? Horseshit. I don't buy it. I do not believe... I've been to a lot of poetry readings with, like, poets with, like, fucking, like, medals and shit imprinted on their books and all kinds of shit, and nobody gives a standing ovation. They clap. They may say woo once in a while, but they absolutely do not get up and fucking stand there standing ovation style at a fucking regular poetry meeting. I don't buy it. This isn't Harvard. This isn't, like, a fucking poet laureate, like fucking Blake or some shit coming back from the dead and reading for the first time in 800 years.
I'm pretty
this is
sure
a regular
it's just
ass
some,
poetry reading.
Like Portland, Maine, you know.
It's Portland, Maine, like you know, like the middle school gymnasium that's also used as a church on Sundays. Like, yeah
exactly.
Would there be a full service bar? Would there be an outbreak of a brawl? And would somebody pour a drink down someone's shirt?
Like, honestly, that part I 100% can see.
That I could buy.
Yeah.
Because that's the most believable part.
That was. Because you definitely do have receptions for authors. And I mean, that was a bunch of theoretically famous poets that were reading. Like, it was a big thing, supposedly. And though I don't necessarily... think it's quite accurate, I don't disbelieve it either.
You should.
The standing ovation
I don't believe, but the fact that rich people want to like show off their poets that they pay money to, that doesn't surprise me in the slightest.
That, like, the idea of having a poetry reading, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's like the framing of the whole thing that doesn't make sense.
No, it was a little bit strange.
Yeah.
But
like,
whatever.
The open bar might make sense for the era. Nowadays, they tend not to be open. You have to still pay.
All right, Sean. Sean, if you went to a performance by Jimmy Smits, would you give him a standing ovation?
Yes.
Yes, because I'd be referencing this movie.
No.
I'd wear a Tommyknocker shirt, and when I stand up, I would put my hands high so he could see the Tommyknockers, and my hands would have those fucking rave bracelets in bright green.
Jimmy Smits is a brilliant dramatic actor, so yes, there's a very good chance I would probably be giving him a standing ovation. Not for his poetry necessarily, but I don't know if he writes poetry, so...
I don't know either. Does he? Does he? Well, hold on. Does Jimmy Smits have a poetry?
You know what? I don't actually care. Can we please get to final thoughts?
No. I want to know.
Yeah, of course you do.
He does not have...
Does The Rock do poetry?
Does The Rock
I will check. Jimmy Smits is not known for his writing acumen. The Rock has an other work section... he has written, or ghostwritten, written and co-written, which just means someone else wrote it, an autobiography.
But no poetry.
And
it's very disappointing.
As far as I can tell, no poetry, but he does have a brand of tequila.
Yeah, which is much better.
Yeah, so none of that. Yeah, so there you go. Sorry. No poetry from Dwayne The Rock Johnson, which probably just says at the end of every poem, "Can you smell what The Rock is cooking?" That's probably
he
what
he could come
said.
On the show and debut a poem.
Look, Dwayne, if Dwayne The Rock Johnson wants to come on the show and read from his poetry that he's been writing, you are more than welcome to do so. We will be respectful because you're Dwayne The Rock Johnson and you can like pop all of our heads off with like one of your like knuckles. So, but please, yeah, if Dwayne The Rock Johnson would like to come read his poetry, you're more than welcome to.
Well, I'm glad.
Kids Are Asleep has just showed up in chat. It says, why do I never wander in when Sean is saying something normal?
Sean never says anything normal.
That is not me. But sorry, Valerie. I don't know what to tell you.
No, Valerie, that's definitely... You're on the wrong show.
You missed like a 25-minute conversation about alien secretions and various...
I mean, if she wanted something normal, she should have shown up 10 minutes ago when you guys were talking about the morality of characters in Stephen King, which was a very normal conversation. I think it was giving this movie way too much fucking credit, but I get it.
I am still surprised at how salty this drink is.
It is called an alien secretion.
I was expecting, like, with the ingredients, something, like, very sweet.
Have you considered maybe changing the diet of the alien for its secretions?
I don't know. I like this. I like it.
Oh, you like
it
when it's salty.
No,
okay.
I like it. I do, yeah. Anyway,
this is so perverted. This is like high school teen sex comedy level comedy right now. Like, we're 1 second away from devolving into the scene in Superbad where he's just drawing dicks on things that don't need dicks. Like, that's how close we are in this moment.
Tommy Knockers knocking on my door. All right, I put my grade in.
All right, well, that does bring us to final thoughts and a grade, because I have already complained about how this film views poetry readings. So, with that in mind, Jen, your final thoughts and a grade, please go.
I mean, it was a movie. It wasn't a movie. Sorry, it was a miniseries adaptation. It was clearly a 90s miniseries adaptation. Like, it was just so a 90s miniseries adaptation. Like, it oozes it from all of its pores.
That is fair.
But that's really, like, there's nothing overly offensive about the film other than the misogyny and some racism. But other than that, like, whatever.
Is there racism in this movie?
I don't remember.
There's
some to
derogatory terms towards Native Americans. I will say that.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair enough.
But that's it. And it's like sparing in that.
It's like minor. It's like a handful of moments.
Yeah. And it's just very 90s in that regard.
It's very, yeah.
Even the misogyny is just like super 90s. So yeah, I'm going to give it a D, but I think the 30% rating on Rotten Tomatoes is like perfectly accurate.
That would be what we call an F minus, Jen.
Okay, well, no, but not in my grading. An F minus on IMDb is like a 10%. Yeah.
Great inflation and the decline of the American public.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, E.B. Hirsch. That is a deep reference. Someone's going to get it. Daniel, final thoughts and grade, go.
It's bloated. It was boring. It is very, very 90s, but in contrast, I will say, I haven't watched it for a while, but I think The Stand is much better in terms of miniseries.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all the side stories and everything are at least interesting. This, there was nothing interesting outside of the main plot, and even the main plot wasn't that interesting. So, D.
Fair point. Yeah, so I guess my thoughts would be, this is just not very good. There's a bunch of like 90s adaptations of Stephen King, and even when they're not good, they're at least a little interesting. Like It, for example, is adapted, and it's got like Tim Curry as Pennywise, and it's got a lot of very interesting choices. Is it a great miniseries? No, but I would rather watch that again over this, and I think a large part of the reason is there's just not a lot going on. It is very long and frankly kind of boring.
Yeah.
At least like with Pennywise, you're like, this isn't good, but like Tim Curry is hamming it up left and right. He is having an absolute blast. In this, it's like, is Jimmy Smits enjoying his time here? Or is he just hoping this scene will be over so he can go enjoy his vacation in New Zealand? Is that what really was going on? And for that reason, I would be a little bit more cruel here, because I feel like other things that I would list as like a D, I might watch again because they're kind of fun in that bad fun way. But this one, I never want to watch Tommyknockers again. I don't think there's really any reason to. For that reason, I'd give it an F. But it's okay. Everyone has a lot of their own view. That's just my point.
I think that's completely fair. Like an F film to me is one that like not only fails on all accounts, but also is actually torturous. This one wasn't completely torturous, but that could have been because I was reading an alien romance novel simultaneously.
That's because you're doing something else, unlike others who committed
to watching
finishing
this movie.
This film.
I mean, I saw everything. It's just that it was really easy. Yeah, I saw everything.
No, you didn't.
I think you got more of the things that I missed, and yeah. I was sitting here watching the screen. I mean, maybe I was paying too much attention to the chat.
Look,
or getting my drink.
I just want to be, of the three of us, I'm the only one that actually watched this start to finish in its entirety, paying attention
Sean,
to this
really?
Thing.
You were the one that literally just like a minute ago didn't realize that the garage attendant modified the Coca-Cola machine in order to turn it into an explosive that also trapped the sheriff. I did. That was me. I noticed that while not even watching the movie. You
That's
did not.
That's how bad this movie
That's
is.
That's how bad
though.
This movie is.
You could sit here watching it and miss things because you just
you
space
your
out.
Eyes glaze over.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually cared about the sheriff dying, so that was why I was watching that part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was really mad because they were such a cute couple.
Which
I mean, like, they had a whole story. They had a whole
the
story.
Doll.
No, it did.
The Hitler
and it was
doll.
Ruined. But Jen, I'm going to do the thing that everyone in fandom does to a woman, which is I'm going to ask you a random question to prove your knowledge.
Oh, please. Do go ahead.
Which doll was the most evil?
Which doll was the most evil? The one that scared the child. The one that scared the child. Which was like a little scarecrow doll that had stitched together mouth and it opened while scaring the child.
Okay.
Yes,
I will accept this.
I watched the movie.
Hold your shit, okay? I'm sending in the mail your Tommyknockers geek card. Okay?
Yeah!
Your membership card.
Yeah!
Is enjoy it. Yep.
Thank you. I will. Yeah, filthy
is
animal.
Is Palito still there?
Yes, yes. Un chiquito palito is in the chat.
Can we have an average for the grades?
Yeah, FDD, Paul. Two Ds and an F.
Probably about a D.
I need like a dum for every bad, inappropriate joke we make on this show. Paul is doing the math as we speak, by the way.
FDD.
Yeah, Paul actually, fun fact, has his own proprietary numbering system that he enters these in, and then it calculates them using, again, a patented mathematical system he's developed for grades.
Did he happen to develop that under the influence of Tommyknockers? Does it glow green when he turns it on?
No, but Paul does, in fact, own the rights to this. And will not share exactly how that system works. So when he conducts his votes, nobody knows about it, which is, of course, part of the secret. They call them pomofdoms.
I have a question.
Master of
fandom. We don't actually care.
Yeah.
I do have a question. This is to get your Tommyknockers geek card. You ready?
No, I don't care.
You ready? What was the typewriter machine called that Marg Helgenberger's character invented?
I literally don't care.
What was it, Sean?
I don't remember.
Neither do
I
actually.
Have terrible memory.
I don't remember either, but I thought it was hilarious that there was actually a name for it. I was like, wait, why though?
Okay. Well, while Paul is thinking about these grades,
I need to find out that the answer to that question, though. So if somebody wants to look it up for me.
The telepathic typewriter.
It wasn't called the telepathic typewriter. It had like
it
some.
Wasn't?
No, yeah. Shockingly. That would have been easy. Yeah. It had some like randomly bizarre name that like had no very little
you
relation
know how you find
to
this
the
out?
Actual invention. Watch the movie.
Really easy way to find out. Yeah, you got to watch the movie again.
Yeah, I got to watch the movie again. Wow. Or I could just fast
YouTube,
forward through the entire movie to that specific
Honestly,
plot.
I think you have to watch the whole thing just to understand context.
Maybe.
So what That's was true. The lipstick?
Final
fragrance?
Passion?
What?
Final passion.
Final passion.
Final passion. Final passion. Final passion.
That could
don't
be the
do
score
that. Please don't do
thing.
That. Final passion. And what is the final passion of today's film? Did Paul give us an answer?
Paul knows the final
No,
passion.
Paul is off doing something else. So we're going to close out the show while Paul thinks about what he's done.
Fair enough.
So, folks, thank you very much for being here. If you're live with us, and if not, you're listening. So thanks for listening. So if you'd like to let us know what you thought about this episode, obviously you can head to giftingfandy.com/listener suggestions and share your thoughts. If you've seen this miniseries and would like to tell us what you thought, please do. We may even take that and put it in a speculative dispatch episode or a Clax or something. As always, if you'd like to suggest things, that's the same place. So there may be films that you'd like to suggest. I will also note, if you're on our Patreon at patreon.com/giftingandfanty, we will give preference to patrons at any level who make suggestions for themes for polls, and then we will make the polls based on those themes. We are always welcome to those themes because it's just fun. It's fun when people get involved. So if you'd like to follow the show, we're Skiffy Fanty on pretty much any social media site that matters. You can go to Linktree, which is linktr.ee/Sean, not Sean Duke, Skiffy Fanty. And then you'll find all our socials, Blue Sky, all of that stuff. We have a newsletter, which is linked there as well, and the Patreon is also there. And please, as always, go to your iTunes and all them places and give us all the reviews. Word of mouth is really important to podcasts. So please tell people about the show if you'd enjoyed this. Tell people that you enjoyed it. Go put it on your socials because, I mean, like, honestly, I have no hopes that I'm going to be able to do this for a living, but, like, it'd be nice if, I don't know, I could buy me a car one day. That'd be great. I need a new car because I own a stealable Kia.
A stealable so. Car. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Anyway, but anyway, support the show.
Yeah. You can find me at LoopDeLoo, basically wherever media is social. Definitely not Twitter, though. You should instead punch Nazis. And that's about it.
Okay.
Oh, and I have a website, loopdeloo.com. So, you know, there's a thing. I'm really not active on anything except here. On Alphabet streams occasionally.
You can find me at reading1000lives.com for book reviews or at reading1000lives on Blue Sky, and that's 1000 as in the numbers 1000.
And me, easy enough to find. Alphabet streams is where I'm on Twitch, which is where the Skiffy Fanty show runs, and then I'm here for other things at Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central. And then I have a link tree for all of my various things, socials and Patreon, blah, 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 which is just /Sean Duke. And that's easy enough to find. So I have to make it awkward now.
Oh, let me.
Do you want to make it awkward?
I think I
can. Is it going to be about alien secretions?
It is 100% going to be about alien secretions.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Cover me in it, Jen.
Cover you in it.
Yeah, yeah. I want to be covered in alien secretions.
With my cocktail.
Is this Avatar? Because their tails are also their cocks.
Really?
I just want to tell you, yes.
Oh, I don't
they
recall
have sex
that fact.
With their tails in the Avatar universe.
They like twine their tails and everything. I don't know if that's
yeah. They like blah, 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 and they do. There's a deleted scene where you can watch them do
boinking
alien
with their cocktails. Loop. Yeah.
Yes, they're like, but they're gender non-specific. I think they can just. I think they're all cocktails.
I'm just saying that this might not be the final passion, but there will definitely be some alien secretions later.
Oh, that's weirdly enough, that's more gross than what Daniel said when we started this. That's disgusting, Jen.
I literally just said that I was reading an alien romance while watching this movie. Why do you not expect there to be alien excretions in my future?
No, no, secretions, which is different than excretions.
Secretions, not the same thing. Sorry, secretions.
Daniel could probably explain the difference between those two because he's a scientist.
Regardless.
What's the difference between a secretion and an excretion, Daniel?
Excretion would be specifically like waste products.
There you go.
Like metabolism. Sorry, my apologies. There will be alien secretions later, not excretions.
My lord, this show has lost it. We've lost everything in our lives.
Hey, hey, Valerie knows about alien secretions too.
Valerie is just telling us that it's different from emissions. Which... Okay, folks, and on that note, awkward ending and scene.
If you want to support this show, you can go to patreon.com/skiffyandfanty or skiffyandfanty.com, our website, where you can get access to all of our fancy things. Our music comes from Holy Mole. You can support him and his work at patreon.com/holymole. Thank you for listening.